asked myself the furthest distance. Rabbi, I should say, Rabbi Nissen Shulman from London, who is with us today. Rabbi Alman, who is a member of the Medical Ethics Consultation Service. Rabbi Bar Rothman, first vice president of the Rabbinic Alumni. And I would like to acknowledge Rabbi Yitzhak Rosenbaum, who is responsible for coordinating all of the efforts of the medical ethics program at Yeshiva, and we're pleased to see, of course, Rabbi Swift, who is with us today as well. It's my pleasure to call upon Rav Herschel Schachter, the Rosh Kollel, for the second presentation of the day. Rav Schachter.
Thank you very much. 2 weeks ago, when we heard the presentation by the doctors at Einstein, one of the doctors spoke of Yetzias Neshama, defining death of a human being by first defining what is personhood. He obviously felt that there's a distinction between the definition of Yetzias Neshama by human beings as opposed to Yetzias Neshama by behemoth, by human being, because the mind is so crucial. That's what distinguishes a human being from a behemoth. So therefore, brain death should be considered death by human beings, but by behemoths, he obviously assumed that it's not so. All of the Mefarshim on the Mishnayos and the Aholos, and the Mishnah that Rasenda quoted earlier today, say that this is not correct, that the Mishnah of Hutaz Roishom, some Mefarshim say, and there's a comment in the middle of the Pirush HaRosh where he says that it doesn't apply to Adam. The concept of Hutaz Roishom doesn't apply to Adam, it only applies to behemoth Chayuyay. The Rashash and the other Mephoshim say that it's very difficult, the Rambam is Beferish, not so, that it does apply to Adam, but we assume, all of the Mephoshim assume, that whatever the definition of Misa is by Adam is going to be the same by Behem. The question is, how does one define Misa? That's the crucial issue. I was told that one of the Rabbanim felt that brain death, they didn't tell me who, they told me one of the Rabbanim felt that brain death is not an acceptable criterion. And he would recommend even that a kohen, he would allow a kohen to wipe off the brow of the individual who is brain dead. But he considers that it's vadai chai. So I thought that was a little striking. Hayos, that everybody should agree that the person who is brain dead is certainly a goises, is at least a goises. And a yeredeya, we pass in la aloha that a kohen is forbidden to enter into the oil goises. Not only not permitted to wipe off his brow, he's not permitted to be in the same room on the hall. It's a din that many people don't know. I remember my father was passing away. He was a geisus for a few days. And my father-in-law, when he passed away, he was a geisus for quite a while. He was also on a respirator. And Kohanim came to visit him. And I asked him, how was the Kohen permitted to come up? So they were unfamiliar with the din. I think that's just the din to be more unrelated to today's topic. I think we have to keep in mind also that the issue of determining when a person is dead is not that Rabbi Tendler is Makel and the other people are Machmir. It can be the reverse also. Take this on. We have to be clear what the din is here, not I want to be more Machmir than Rabbi Tendler. You can have the following situation. What happens if a woman is married, she has a child, and that child is brain dead, and then her husband dies while the child is still in a state of being brain dead, which is not going to be too long. He said it's only a day or two, maximum. But if the husband dies, do we consider the child as dead? And therefore, the child died before the husband, so therefore the woman needs chalitza. Or do you say, no, the child is considered alive, and the woman does not need chalitza. So if you don't hold from brain death, you hold the vaday that it's not brain death. Even you say a kohen is permitted. I think that's not correct. A kohen is certainly not permitted. You hold, is vaday not dead? You would say that the woman is exempt from chalitza, or do you consider it a suffix, and you have to go the chumer in both directions? What is the criterion to determine death? So the Gemara was quoted before, the Gemara Yomba, Vayipak Tziyapak Nishmas Chaim, that has to do with breathing. Should we understand the Gemara Kipshuto just has to do with breathing? So the question was pointed out, so what if one lives on an iron lung? He's not breathing spontaneously. So Rav Tanla suggested, no, the Pshat in the Gemara is, the Gemara means to say whether the stem of the brain is able to control, is able to help the body breathe or not. In the days of the Talmud, I don't think, I'm not sufficiently familiar, I don't think that the Chachmei HaGemara were aware of this point, that the stem of the brain controlled the breathing. And I don't think that it's, even though it's such a beautiful definition of the Gemara to say that Vayipach Biapov means this, this is the one and only definition of death. Vayipach Biapov means whether the stem of the brain is dead or not. I don't think we can possibly assume that this is what the Chachmei HaGemara had in mind. Should we have the right today, in our point in history, to give this definition of the Pshat and the Pasuk, to say that this is the Koveya? I think this is very questionable. The Gemara tells us in Avodah Zarah, Daf Testament Aleph, that Shita Alfei Shnin Havi Yalmo, the first 2,000 years are Shnei Alafim Tohu. Then the Gemara says Shnei Alafim Torah and Shnei Alafim Mimaisa Mashiach. So the Mashiach has a question on the Gemara. What do you mean? Shnei Alafim Torah, then Shnei Alafim is Mimaisa Mashiach, is no longer Torah. After the year 240, we assume the year 240, roughly speaking, was the beginning of the last 2,000 years. That corresponded to the year 4,000, beginning of the Elef HaChamishi. So that is no longer any Torah. We're still learning Torah at Ayam Hazeh. So the Mashiach comments in the Chidushi HaGadol, no, the Gemara means that there was Shnei Alofim Torah, that there was only Torah, and the last two Alofim is certainly Torah, and it's also Yimois HaMashiach. Mashiach can come any time in the last 2,000 years. The Chazon Ish has a comment in Hilchos Treifus, in Chelik Yeridais and in Hei Ois Gimel, where he writes that he thinks that the Gemara is not saying what the Mashiach said. He thinks that just like the Shnei Alofim Tohu was only Tohu, so the Shnei Alofim Yimois HaMashiach is only Yimois HaMashiach, and it's not Torah. I was learning Torah today. The Chazon Ish wrote a sefer, he was learning Torah. So he writes that he thinks that Pshat Shnei Alofim Torah means that during those 2,000 years, from the year 2000 to the year 4,000, from Bria Soilim, all of the dinim were Nikva. We cannot be Koveya, any new dinim today. Everything had to be Nikva Bizman HaTalmud up until that time. So what exactly was the Kviyus Bizman HaGemara? What was the Kviyus? Whatever the Kviyus was, Lachar, that's binding today, unless it was made in error. But if it wasn't made by mistake, then whatever that Kviyus is binding today. What exactly led the Chachamim, before we get to what the Kviyus is, how did the Chachamim know how to figure out what the Kviyus is? So the Chasam Sofer mentioned earlier in Simen Shin Lamed Ches, was quoted, Ramoshin as Tshuva says we should follow Chasam Sofer. Chasam Sofer in the beginning of his Tshuva, in the third, it's a very long Tshuva, in the third of the fourth paragraph, writes, Dibam Askel Menechzi Anan, he writes that the Torah has a din that when somebody dies, you have to bury him. You're not supposed to bury him before he dies. So first you have to be kaveya, when is he dead? So he says, the Chachamim must have either had a halacha l'moshe misinai as to what the kviyas hamavis is, or they must have determined it based on consultation with doctors. One or the other. Whatever it is, if it was a halacha l'moshe misinai, then it certainly may not be changed. But even if it was a kviyas based on what the doctors told them, I don't think we have the right to substitute what our doctors have to teach us today based on the stem of the brain, as opposed to what the doctors of Bizman HaGemara had to say, unless the doctors of Bizman HaGemara had made a mistake. So I'd like to present what I think the issue should be. It was mentioned earlier that there's such a thing from the Yeridei, and that there's such a thing as death of a aver. Not only is there death of the whole body, there's death of an aver. The Gemara in the first paragraph in Avodah Zarah has a din that a mechuser aver is pasul lahakrova by bnei noach and korban, and is pasul lahakrova by oifes, even though by an oif. There is no din of Balmum. Tamas v'zachus b'behemah being Tamas v'zachus b'oifos, but the mechuser aver is pasuk. And the Gemara learns that from the pasuk habehemah hachay yishachay in rashi evarim shelo, that there's such a concept is of death to an aver. How does one determine death to an aver? So there are two mishnayos in Chulin. One is on Kuf Chav Zayinim and Aleph, one is Kuf Chav Tesim and Beis, where the Mishnah speaks about Bosa the Eber Hamadon Dolim Behema Chai V'yoif, where the Eber is completely severed from the body and is just being held together with the outer skin. So the Mishnah says that even though these are not Metamei Midin Eber Men Achai, because we learn that from the Pasuk, Kiipol Min Evlosom, you have to have Dafke Derech Nipul, and it's not Nipul if it's still attached to the body. If the whole Behema will die, then Nisa is a Nipul. Then it's considered an Eva mace. Because the whole body is alive, then I say that those Evorim do not yet have the Tumas Eva Menachai. But still, these Evorim, since they're completely severed and there's no Chiyus at all, they're considered dead. The Shaila was raised, what happens if the Eva, Rav Tendla raised it before, what happens if the Eva has not been severed completely in the inside? It's just that the Eva is gangrene, that the blood is no longer circulating to that Eva. What would the din be in such a case? Do you consider this a dead Eva or not? So Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva where he presents three opinions on the following shayla. A man has to put tefillin on his left arm. So what if the left arm is paralyzed, or what if the left arm has gangrene set in? would it be yaitz the mitzvah of tefillin if he puts the tefillin on the left arm? If the left arm has been cut off and just pasted back on, so he's certainly not yaitz the mitzvah of tefillin. That's not the yaver is then. Or if the yaver is meduldol that's cut in the inside and just held together on the outside with skin, then the Mishnah says that it's an yaver mace. It's just not yet metame because you need derech nefila ki ipo, you need nipo. But if we should consider the Eva Meis, then Rav Moshe assumes with our Toshut you wouldn't be yet to the Mitzvah Tzum. So what's talk about? Rav Moshe quotes three opinions. So he quotes one opinion that even if the Eva is not gangrene, it's just that it's paralyzed, one cannot be yet to tefillin on that arm, and he doesn't think that this is correct. Then Rav Moshe himself thinks that if the Eva has gangrene set in, that's considered mace. Gangrene means that there's no blood circulation. Then he quotes those who disagree, Goyim from Europe, Meir Arik and others who disagree, and say that even if the Eva had gangrene set in, one would be Yotze the Mitzvah of Tum. If you look, there's a sefer on Hilchas Tum that's called Maasef L'chol HaMachanais. Arun Garish wrote a beautiful Likud. Simon Chav Zayin says, Kotten Tess, he quotes several Tshuvas Achronim who discuss this issue. Rav Moshe quotes some of them. What is Rav Moshe's definition based on? That an Eva that's gangrene, that's what Tendler assumed before, that an Eva that's gangrene is considered dead, even though nothing is cut at all, just that there's no blood circulation. So I think the pashtus is that it's based on, just yesterday there was a blood drive here, so they had on all the signs that blood is life. Where did they get this from, blood is life? So that's a pasuk in the third. It says in Parashas Reki, Hadam hu ha-nefesh. So the Gemara seems to understand that pasuk is meaning that the definition of life is the circulation of blood. So if the blood circulation in the whole body has stopped, so the whole body is dead. If the blood circulation to any one Aver has stopped, so Moshe assumes, as well as many others, that then I consider that Aver as being dead. There's a pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim as well regarding the Boba Machteres, where it says Haboba Machteres in a situation when he's Boa Liski Nefashis, so it says Ein Lo Domim. And when he's not Boa Liski Nefashis, just Boa Liski Mamin, so the pasuk says Domim Lo. So what is the pshat? Ein Lo Domim or Domim Lo? So the Ibn Ezra quotes a pshat that he doesn't like, but that's the pshat that the Ramban likes and the Vilna Gaon likes, and that seems to be the Pashup pshat. That Domim Lo means that it's considered as if he has blood circulating in his body, and Ein Lo Domim means that the one who's Boba Machteris is considered like a person who doesn't have any blood circulation. One whose blood circulation has stopped is considered a mace. That's what Taisa says in Ksubas, that's Haman base. We all know. We know from Ksubas, from Shabbos, from other places, that Taisa says that one is motzi dam b'shabbos, achoyvel, is chai mishum, which malachas, the Taisa says that it's told of netilas neshama. What's that netilas neshama? The person or the animal is still alive. So Taisa says, ki adam hu ha-nefesh, emalikot l'kula, emalikot l'palgum. Fine. So I think this is the definition of life and death. Life haste when there's blood circulation, and death haste when the blood has stopped circulating. What the mocker is? The mocker is a pasuk in Chumash. Three pasuk in the Chumash. The pasuk ki adam hu ha-nefesh, and the pasuk by Boba Machter is Domim Lo, and the Pasuk Ein Lo Domim, and the Taisus in Ksubas, and Achayvel, the Taisus in Shabbos, and Achayvel the Shabbos, the Malach is Natilas Neshama, because Ki Adam Ho Anev, it's not just the Melita, that is the Halach. So if, again, if the entire blood system has stopped, so that's the definition of death. If the entire blood system has not stopped, it's just that one aver is gangrene, the brain is gangrene and brain death, or the leg is gangrene, or the arm, the left arm is gangrene. So the shaila is, should I consider that aver as being dead or not? So that was the machlekes. That was Rav Moshe held that aver is considered dead. That's an Igros Moshe Simen Ches and Simen Tes in the first Chelek Arachai. And he quotes the others who held that it's not correct. In fact, the simple chutzpah to say who's more correct, but the simple pshat in the Gemara Kiddushin, Rav Moshe has an iluyah shetaych in the Gemara, but the pashup pshat is not like Rav Moshe says. The Gemara says in Kiddushin that there's a din of a mechuser eva by yoif. So the Gemara quotes a brayser. What if yobsho gapo? What if the wing of the yoif is yobsho? That's the question. What does it mean yobsho? So that's a machlekes achrayin. Whether yobsho means paralyzed or yobsho means that it's gangrene. So many achrayim hold that yobsho means gangrene. So it says that yobsho gapo, if the wing is gangrene, so you cannot be makir with such a yoif on the mizbeach. That's considered mechuser eva. So Rav Moshe says that you see from that Gemara that when it's completely yavish, when the blood, even though the blood system is still running, but there's no blood circulation in that wing, so that wing is considered dead, and dead is a mechuser eva. Whatever eva is dead is considered the kilo nechtach min aguf. The Ravid, quoted by the Rashba, and that Gemara says that this only applies to the gaf of the oif, only to the wing, because the word, the Ofi Ofeif Al Ha'aretz, the definition of the word oif is that it's ma'ofeif, that it flies. So if the gaf doesn't function, if the wings don't function, so how can you call it an oif if it's not able to be ma'ofeif? That's why some achronim even understood yopsha gapa just mean paralyzed. It's not even that it's gangrene. So even assuming that yopsha gapa means gangrene, so the Rajba quotes in the name of the Raiva that that's only yopsha gapa. Yopsha, any other aver in the body of the yoif would not disqualify it for hakrov. So Rabbi Yosef Engel in the Gilyoni Hashas and Kiddushin Daf Chav Dalet and Rameir Arik and his Chuvis, Rabbi Moshe refers to the Chuvi, doesn't tell where it is, it's in Chelik Beis and Nimri Yosha Simon Yudalet and several other of the Gdol Achreinim quote that Ravid, quoted by the Rashbo, and they say, you see from the Ravid that a gangrene aver is not considered Mechusar Eivah. It's a special din only by Oif, Yoifeif Al Ha'orens, if Yopsha Gapa, but if Yopsha Raglo, the din wouldn't apply. So you see that just because the blood circulation stopped in any one particular aver, you don't consider that aver dead. It's only if it's mamish cut, like the Mishnah has in Chul and Kuf Chavazayin, Kuf Chavtez, if the aver is cut and it's just held together with the ore on the outside, then it's considered an aver mace. But if the blood circulation of the rest of the body is still running, just to one aver it stops, and then we wouldn't consider that aver is dead. Rav Moshe quotes this Rashba B'Shem the Ravid also. So he has an Iluyish Taich, and he says, no, what the Ravid meant to say was that Mechusa aver doesn't passel in a knife in all Avorim. He says, if the leg of the oif is broken, chopped off, just like Balmum is kosher, so Mechusa aver is kosher on other Avorim as well. It only passels on certain Avorim. So this is the point that the other Gedol Achronim in Europe held that they thought that that wasn't at all the Toshe Pshat and the Ravid. They held that the Ravid assumes that Mechusar Eivah and if any Eivah would passel. But he's saying over here whether Yopsha has the same status as Mechusar Eivah, he only says it's been a Geir to Gapo. How does one determine, how does one define the stopping of blood circulation as being dead? So Rav Moshe refers to the Gemara in Chorus and Chulin, where the Gemara says it's only if the cessation of the blood flow is in an irreversible fashion. If it's reversible, then it's not considered the stopping of the blood. But if you have, let's say, an arm that's gangrene and it's irreversible, the brain is gangrene. So Rav Moshe claims, together with a few Gedol Achronim, that this would be considered Misa and that Aver. Now, if we want to determine what's considered misa on the whole balchai, on the whole behema chai v'yoifer, on the yodom, because Allah doesn't distinguish between them. The Mishnah puts them all together. Hutas roisham by all of them. They're all the same. Just derech agav, parenthetically, years ago when we learned Sanhedrin, so when the Rav was saying shurim b'derech pilpul, he suggested the following svara, but he says you can't make up svaras. You can't pass on Allah based on svaras. He says, what if you have a person who is brain dead? That was in the Friyat de Gedor. His brain dead didn't mean even what it meant in 1968. That was years before. Brain dead just meant that it's a flat EEG, whatever they used to call it then, EKG. They're different Rashi Tevis then. There was Koidem Bria Soilana. So the Rav said, Asvara, that maybe one can say that even though he's not yet Metameh, because it's not yet dead, but maybe he's not considered an Odom, that there should be an Isir Etzich. Maybe it's Mutal Ahav. But he said, you have to have Makaris for that. When we were learning Sanhedrin, the Sugi of Ratzeach said, you have to have Makaris. He was looking in the Makaris, and he said, we don't have enough Makaris. You have to have Makaris. So we assume that you have to define what's dead by Behema, Chai V'yoif, and Odom, and Sheretz. It's going to have one definition. The Gemara has in several Mekoyrois a concept of Eva Shahanashama Tluyabo. The Gemara has, those of us who learned Noshim and Ezekiel will certainly remember from Kiddushin on Rav Zayin and Aleph. The Gemara talks about a Mekadosh Chatzi Isha, that if he uses a Loshin of Eva Shahanashama Tluyabo, the Gemara asks, why not say Pashto Kiddusha Bekula? And then the Gemara there quotes the Sugi from Tamura, Daf Yunam and Beis, when they get to one is Magdish Ragla Shalzuwaila, Yoda Shalzuwaila. So there's a machlekes atanayim where they say pashta kedusha b'kula, but if you magdish an evish anasham b'tliyibo, then you certainly say pashta kedusha b'kula. The Mishnah in Erechin has the principle of evish anasham b'tliyibo. And Chorus that Kim Lamed Aleph, the Gemara has a machlekes amarayim regarding shutz esakum. This is quoted in the Yerideyas, in the Shinchof, in the Shach. This is quoted in Gimel, talks about this. If you have shutzis with a nachri and a behemah, it patters from the din of Bechira. So how much does the Nachri have to have a chelik in the behemoth that it should patter? So there's one opinion in the Gemara that he has to have a shutzis and a nevish on a shomut libo, and the Shach quotes from the Tosfos and Avodah Zarah and from the Mordechai that the proper thing is to be machmer for this. What exactly is the Eivah? What are the Eivah on a shomut libo? So in my opinion, this is what the Chassam Sofer was talking about. The Chassam Sofer says either the Chachamim had a halachah l'Moshe Mi-Sinai, or they asked the Reifes Manam and they followed what the Reifim said. The Chachamim say, Rosho shel zuoy lo, Hareini nozir, Hare kvedi nozir, Hare roshi nozir. So the Gemara considers the liver and Eivash Anasham Rukluyabo. The Rambam writes the heart, the lave, even though the Gemara doesn't say the Feirish, I don't think. The Rambam writes that lave is Eivash Anasham Rukluyabo. Rosh, the brain, L'chor, Rosh doesn't mean it's the ears. You can cut off the nose and the ears and the chin and it'll still live. So L'chor means the brain. And the lungs, that's granted, doesn't say in the Gemara. So long as it doesn't say, even though Metzias, we know that it is Eivish Anasham Klipa, but the Gemara doesn't have that disfavored thing. Gemara just has Roish and Kaveh, and the Rambam adds on Leiv. So these are Alpidin considered Eivish Anasham Klipa. So what would be the din if one of these Eivorim would be gangrene? Either the Roish, or the Kaveh, or the Leiv. One of them would be dead. So I would have said, if you put two and two together, you get four. If you hold like Rav Moshe's Tshuva, by the tefillin on the yopsha hayad, that's considered dead, and you have the organism can only live if it has the evarim shanasham klibos. So if one evarim shanasham klibos is dead, so he's not alive, so he's dead. So by definition, that's dead. So the Mishkanes Yankif writes in his tshuva in Chelek Yeridei, the end of Siman Yud, quoted by the Piskei Tshuva, not my Bikis, quoted by the Piskei Tshuva on Hilchas Treifas in Siman Mem, that in order to declare that the whole organism is dead, it's not sufficient that one of the Eivish Anasham Kliyabo's mace, you have to have all of them, whatever all of them are. So the Gemara has Reish, and you have Kaveh, and the Rambam adds on Leiv, and maybe Reya, I don't know, but that doesn't say in the Gemara. Just because we know that it's true, it doesn't necessarily mean that that's the halach. Either they had halach on the Moshe Mi-Sinai, or the Reifes Manam told them what it should be. So I think that to determine that a brain dead individual should be considered dead would really be based, it's not such a dead. I saw one of the essays, one of the Rabbanim published recently a few months ago. He wrote that what Rabbi Tendler presented is totally no mocker at all, and the Makaris have to be from the Mora Nevuchim and from the Kuzari and from Rabbeinu B'chai Al HaTorah. I thought that was a little unusual, that you don't pass in halach is based on a Pirush HaMishnayis that we had in a Mishnah and a Yerideya. We pass in halach is based on the Kuris. The Rambam has to have the Rambam and the Mora Nevuchim and the Kuzari, the Rabbeinu B'chaya, that they should be entitled to an opinion. They didn't get the straight the Torah from the Rabbeinu Shalom. They have to have a Kuris in the Gemara. It can't pass in Dinim based on what the Rambam writes in the Mora Nevuchim. You have to find what are the Makaris of the Mora Nevuchim. So the Makaris have to be in Shas, in the Gemara somewhere. So I think these are the Makaris. So to say, as Rabbi Tendler presented, I find it very difficult to say that that was the Pshat that the Chachmei HaGemara held in the Pasuk Vayipach Biyapach Nishmas Chaim, that's what it means. That the Pshat Vayipach Biyapach means that the brain of the dead, the stem of the brain is dead, which controls the breathing. The Chachmei HaGemara didn't know about that. So how can we interpret that's the Pshat in the Drosh? I can understand this opinion that was presented earlier based on the two premises. Based on Ramosha's Tshuva by the Yov Shoh Hayad, that if there's a gangrene aver in the body, that aver is considered dead. And then you assume, like several poskim hold, that if any one of the avarim shanasham tluyabo is dead, so he's dead. So the whole organism is dead. But there are pluktas on each one of these. On the first point, there's a machlekes where Moshe himself quotes Rav Shlomo Kluger, and he disagrees. Rav Meir Arik, and he disagrees. Others, Milchas Alozen, and he disagrees. He quotes those who don't hold like him, and he insists that he's right. And on the second point is also the machlekes, that the Mishkanes Yankiv writes, the Mishkanes Yankiv has a right from a Yerushalmi. He quotes a passage from the Yerushalmi, Maseches Avodah Zarah, in the Mishnah of Oris Levuvin, where the Yerushalmi says, from here we see Oris Levuvin means that they cut out the heart L'shem Avodah Zarah. So the Yerushalmi says, but a Baal Chai cannot be Nesar. You have a Mishnah. If you hamishtach v'lebeim is not posel lagavoya, but it's muta b'hanor. So why does it say that oris levuv and the whole behem is also b'hanor? So the Rishami says also meris in this mishnah you see that if he made a mice in the behem, if he just mishtach v'to the behem, he didn't do a mice, then it's no nesa. But if the person did a mice in the behem, so the behem is nesa. How much of a mice does he have to do? So one could have said, well, oris levuv and he takes a knife and he cuts out the whole heart from the behem. So he killed the behem. So the behem is dead already. So that's not a bachai. So Yishalmi says, no. Zos Ameris, in this Mishnah, Oris Levuvin, you see that if he takes a knife and he makes the behem into a trefa, the shame of it is, that's enough to ask the behem, even though the behem is alive. So what kind of a raya is that? But if you cut out the heart, isn't the animal dead? So he says, you see from the Yishalmi that they hold that by Yevash HaNashama Tliyabo, you have to have that all of the Yevarim HaNashama Tliyabo should be removed. Not just one of them should be missing. They should all be missing. The Ritvaz, in his commentary, Rabbi Ritvaz, he was a rabbi in Chicago. He printed his own Yerushalmi with his own commentary, a Talmud of the Beis Halevi. So the Ritvaz, in his commentary on the side of the Yerushalmi, gives a different, doesn't allude to the Mishkan of Yankiv, he gives a different interpretation of Yerushalmi. He says the Yerushalmi understood Oris Levuvin that they cut out the skin on the surface of the behemoth. They didn't cut out the heart. Because if they cut out the heart, the behemoth is like mamish dead. How can you say that Zosa merits that if he made the behemoth tray for the shame of the deserve that it's Nasa? But I don't know. So the Pashup Shat in Yerushalmi, I think, is not. The Pashup Shat in the Mishnah, Oris Levuvin means he cut out the heart. That's what everybody understands. Oris Levuvin used to cut out the heart, the shame of it is up. Whether the Raif in the Yerushalmi is good or is not good, but that's what the Mishkan of Yankiv writes. He thinks that when you have an Avish on a Shamach Liobo, which is dead or removed, then we do not declare the animal as dead until all of the Avarim Shana Shama Tliyabahem are dead. What's the definition of dead? That the blood circulation has stopped by all of them. The Mishnah in Aholis that was quoted earlier, Hutas Rosho, is considered mace. I don't think we necessarily have to understand that Hutas Rosho is the kvius of the death. When you chop off the animal's head, from a mele, within a matter of a second or two, I understand that the whole blood circulation will stop. But in this instance of the person whose brain is dead, means that there's no blood circulation to the brain, so that Eivish HaNashamut Loibah is like Yopsho, that's gangrene. But the other Eivarim HaNashamut Loibah are still having the blood circulating to them. They're considered, they're for sure still considered Chai. So again, to have this position that was mentioned earlier, that a brain-dead animal, a brain-dead person should be considered dead, I think I would understand it as based on a combination of these two factors, that any Ava that's gangrene is considered mace, and if you have one of the Avarim Shana Shamut Liyabohem which is dead, then the organism is considered dead Al Pi Din. That's the definition of Ava Shana Shamut Liyabohem. Who made up this Din Ava Shana Shamut Liyabohem? That's what some Sefer said, either that was Halacha Moshe Misinai, or that was Mipi HaRoisim. But each one of these two points is questionable. The first point about the gangrene Ava of Moshe is in disagreement with many previous poskim. And the second point is the machlokes that the Mishkanos Yankif and several other Achronim also disputed. They felt that it's not sufficient if you have one Eivish HaNashamut Liyabo which is missing. It was mentioned earlier that the Rambam writes in Hilchos Avel that after the person stops breathing, you have to wait a few moments to see that the person is really dead. So one of the recent publications, one of the people who wrote on the topic, wrote that the Rambam begins that Perek, I don't remember exactly the word, in the Kachu HaMinik. He's writing, this is the Minik, what the Chevek Hadisha does when somebody dies. So one of the people wrote that this is only a Minik, but Nikar Adin, once the person stopped breathing, so he's really dead Al Pidin. But Moshe seems not to have held like that. Moshe Shuva seems to assume that you really have to wait a few minutes Al Pidin. So I was wondering, why should you have to wait a few minutes? So when we had the session 2 weeks ago, one of the doctors told us a point of information. I imagine it's a Pashut thing, but I just never knew it. He pointed out, we wanted to know which Evarim die first. So he told us that if a person drowns, so then he'll stop breathing, but the blood circulation will still continue for up to 15 minutes or so. But if he didn't drown, and let's say he stopped breathing for other reasons, just because he's holding by dying, then the other Evarim, it won't take 15 minutes for the other Evarim to die. They may die earlier. So I thought that perhaps that's the reason why the Rambam says you have to wait a few minutes, if you should assume that this is a real din, that it's not stam a minik, like one suggested that around the beginning of that, the first few words in the parakah, the kach minik. If one should assume that this line and there, some of the dinim in that parakah are not minhagim, some of the dinim are dinim, some of the things that he says are dinim. So if one should assume that this idea is also a din, I thought maybe that's the reason for the din. So we have to make sure that not just that the lungs are not functioning, that's not sufficient. You have to make sure if you wait 15 minutes, then you know that all of the Evarim Shana Shama Tluya Bahem are dead because the whole circulatory system will have collapsed already. 2 years ago we had a guest Rebbe here in the Yeshiva from Eretz Yisrael, Blazer Shapiro, who was before he came here, he said that the day before he came they had completed the Psak and the Rabbanut on the brain death. So he told us that the Psak was based on a tziruf of different svaras. So one svara was that maybe brain death is dead. That was one svara, but that wasn't the whole Psak, he said. And then there was another svara that who were the people that were taking the Yevorim from? These are people who were in automobile accidents. So the people in automobile accidents, they're anyway goyses b'diyadam. And the goyses b'diyadam, the Gemara says, ha-harga was potter. And another tziruf was that you don't have one doctor do the whole job on his own. You have to have a whole team of doctors. So one doctor cuts this artery, another doctor cuts another artery. They have a few people take out. So the Gemara says that hikuhu shnayim evasachas, if it's a shnayim shosuhu by ritziche, so the Gemara says that it's potter. So it's a tziruf of all of these svaros. We found this idea of tziruf highly questionable. Shnayim shaharguhu is not a din that there's no isa ritzicha. Shnayim shaharguhu is a din that there's no einish misa, but there certainly is an isa ritzicha. One who was in an automobile accident, I think it's very difficult to assume. There is a concept of the goyses b'dayodim, there's a concept of goyses b'dayshamayim, and there's a concept of treifa. The three different things. One who was in an automobile accident, I think it's very difficult to assume that such a person is considered a goyses b'dayodim. Goyses b'dayodim means that there was an act of ritzicha. Someone murdered him. There was an accident. That's considered, let's say, the automobile slipped on the ice and it crashed, fell over the cliff. Or two automobiles crashed into each other, one went out of control. I don't think that's considered, unless someone is out to get the other one and he crashes into his car, then I can vision, and then I can understand that it should be considered a goyses b'diyodam. But I feel him to learn that that would be the case. The fellow is a goyses b'diyodam, mazu halacha, but a goyses b'diyodam is considered kemeis, legabi dizin yonim. The Achreidim have a whole discussion of this. What's the din if a baby is a goyses b'diyodam on the yoim lamad aleph, whether it needs pidyon haben or not? If the baby is a treifa b'choshen, nitra b'toch lamad yoim, so the Gemara says in Baba Kama that there's no pidyon haben, because a treifa is considered a gabi k'tila. What about a goyses b'diyodam? A hori goyses b'diyodam is potter. Is that because a goyses b'diyodam is also dina kemeis, like a treifa? So if the baby is a goyses b'diyodam on the yoim lamad aleph, there's no chiyah pidyon haben? Or should you say no? That a goyses b'diyodam, a horga potter, is a different reason, because it's considered shnayim shaharguhu. That's why. If one person shot him and he's a goyses b'diyodam and I shoot him, so that's called shnayim shaharguhu. That's why it's potter. It's not that a goyses b'diyodam is dina kemeis. So this suffix, what's the getter hadin of goyses b'diyodam, but a horga potter because it's dina kemeis, or because it's shnayim shaharguhu, appears in the nemuke yoysis, I'm Baba Kama, and that daf. I'm Chor Shenitra B'Toch Lama Yom. Rabbi Kivege quotes it on Yerodei Hilchus Pidyon Aben. And the other Achranim discuss it. Rabbi Chaim Oiz has a tshuva about this. Legabi Chalitze. Other Rabbi Chaim Oiz quotes several Achranim who discuss it. What if the child of the woman who's married was a Goyses B'diyodam? What if he was a Treifa and then the husband died? Do you consider Treifa Kemeis Legabi Chalitze or not? Is a Machlekes in Achranim. And I feel in Tim's Lema that Treifa is considered Kemeis, even Legabi Chalitze, which itself is a very strange opinion. There's a group of Tosfim like that. What would be the din of Goyses B'diyodam? So that opinion hasn't really been accepted, that Goyses B'diyodam Ha-Horga Potter is because it's considered Kemeis. The Pashtus is not considered Kemeis. The Pashtus is Ha-Horga Potter because it's Shnayim Shohagu. Shnayim Shohagu is an Isra Lo Sirtzach. So you cannot be I don't see that there's anything to be mitzaref here. Neither the Goyses B'diyodam. I don't see that it's a Goyses B'diyodam. I don't see that a Goyses B'diyodam is considered Kemeis, that there's what to be mitzaref. I don't see that Shnayim Shohagu is what to be mitzaref. The issue only hinges on this one question, whether we should adopt this definition of death, a brain death. I do not understand how some Rabbanim can be so, doctors Rabbanim can be so convinced that Rabbi Tendler's position is not correct. How can we be so convinced that it's not correct? If you would have asked me, I would have said that 2 and 2 is 4. That if the arm is gangrene, is dead, so the brain is dead. Eva shanashama tliyibo, by definition. Shanashama tliyibo, so the whole organism is dead. That's the definition. But you see that the two points are not muskim. The first point is talib machleg, the second point is talib machleg. So I can see that someone will hold that it's a suffix, where they consider him chai meis. But to say that he's a vadai chai, and he would allow a kohen to wipe off his brow, which is tam keneged din, he's a goyis, he's a kohen can't walk in. But even to say that if the child is brain dead and then the husband dies, that the wife is ptura min achalitza, that the child is vadai chai, this I cannot see. I think that it's at least a suffix, but I cannot see how we can possibly be machriya on this issue. Regarding the question, one who is already brain dead, are we obligated to maintain him, to extend his life? That's a different question. Even if one should assume that the person is not considered dead, one might possibly assume that we're not obligated to extend his life. The Stifler has in one of his letters that was published by the family after he passed away, in the Sefer Krina de Igarta, he has in one of his letters that as children we were all trained to believe that we always have an obligation to extend the person's life under all circumstances, under all conditions. And he says, when we got a little older, we learned a little bit to Gemaris and Yerideya, and we found that it's not exactly so. That sometimes there's no obligation to extend a person's life, and it's a question, and he doesn't explain what the din is. Just says it's problematic. It's a serious question. When is the person obligated to extend one's life? Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has in his Sefer Mincha Shloimeh, and is quoted in other sources, more barichas, as saying that although the Ran in the Dorim Daf Nem says that a person who's mamish holding by dying and he's suffering yisurim, so it's a mitzvah to be mispal for that person that he should die. The Ran passes based on the Madian too, so a mitzvah to be mispal that he should die. He says, yeah, a mitzvah to be mispal to the Ban Shalom that he should die, but you're still obligated to give him the intravenous and the medication and everything. Not obligated to give, to go out of your way to give very special attention. But to give basics like medication, intravenous, this you're obligated. And Rav Moshe, I assume, held not so. I think in the truth was held not so, that you're not obligated to. Rav Moshe felt that you were obligated, like Rav Shlomo Zalman held. I don't know, I thought that this was very difficult to hold like this, because I daven to the Rav Shlomo that the man should die, and then I give him the intravenous, and then I give him the medication. So how can you say that...
Not discontinued. He was given it all along. Discontinue,
he told, with active euthanasia. Oh, what do you mean discontinue? So to pull it out. But let's say the bottle of intravenous will end. Not mukhiyiv. Rav Shlomo Zalman says he mukhiyiv to continue giving more. So I thought that Rav Moshe's position was more mistamer. I can't understand. How can you say that you're permitted to daven to the Rabban Shalom that the man should die, and b'vasachas, while you're davening, you give him the intravenous and you give him the medications. So what are you davening and giving him the medication at the same time? If the Ran says that you can daven that he should pass away, so the Pashtus Hasornas Enesi means that you're not mukhayif to extend his life. So to stop the intravenous or to disconnect the respirator or something, that's an act of Ritzicha. But not to replace the oxygen, or not to replace it with another bottle of intravenous, or not to give medication, so the Pashtus is that you're not mukhayif. A person is not a bailim on his life. A person has no right to take away his life, but the person is the bailim to determine when it's considered pikuach nefesh, and when it's not considered pikuach nefesh, when it's worth living, when it's not worth living. The Gemara tells us in Soitan Daf Mevavah Mebeis that there was a city, Luz, where the Malach HaMavis had no shlita. The Gemara says Nebuchadnezzar came and he didn't destroy that city, and this one came, no one succeeded in destroying that city. And years later, the Malach HaMavis had no shlita in that city. When the people became very old and they had decided that they had it, so they would just leave the city and they would die. So you see from the Pashtus HaGemara that there is no obligation on a person to extend his life under all circumstances till as much as possible. When a person is not a bailim to take away his life, Rav Zevin has an essay, many of you must be familiar, about Mishpat Shylock, that a person, he quotes all the source, person is not a bailim on his body, is not a bailim on his life, Hanasham is Lihain, but the person is the bailim to be kaveya, whether it's worth continuing to live on or not. So the Hardish should be up to the person. Rav Moshe has in one of his tshuvas that if the person is suffering tremendous yisurim, and the doctors want to maintain the person, to keep him alive in order to take some organs, in order to make organ transplants later, so he says that this is considered an isa havala to prolong the life of the person. And even if the person requests that he would like his life to be prolonged, so Rav Moshe says that this is prohibited. Why? I assume that we say botla daipetzel das kol b'ni adam. We assume that what the person is requesting is utterly ridiculous. If you were to ask 999 people out of 1,000 in this case, they would all say, let me die in peace. I don't want to live on. It doesn't pay to live on in such a case. Even if this person, the one out of 1,000, says not so, he wants to live on, we should assume that Batla Daita Soldas Kol B'ni Adam, and his life is not worth living. So I think that in this situation, let's say if a person is brain dead, do we have the obligation to continue? I don't think we have the ability to be machriya in the two sveikis as to whether the person is alive or dead. So I would say lechumra we should consider the person as dead. Lechumra we have to consider him as alive. Lechumra by the chalitza case, and lechumra by burying him right away. The mitzvah kavatik v'ran. I would assume that it's a suffik ritzicha. Do we have an obligation to give him more intravenous? I would assume that not. There's no obligation to extend his life. If you were to ask 1,000 people, if they would be in such a situation, would they want to have their life extended? There's no suffering, there's no pain, because the nervous system is not functioning. But if you would ask many people what they would want to live on, I assume that normal people would say no. life is not worth living in such a situation. So even though you have no right to kill them, but I would assume that there's no chiyuv to prolong their life, because the people themselves would say that they wouldn't be interested in having this. Rav Moshe, in his tshuva that was quoted earlier, wrote that if Ben Kovako, the doctors had to take the patient off of the respirator in order to suction out the mucus from the throat, so then once he's off of the respirator, so he said sometimes you're not mechuyav to put him back on the respirator. So when we had the sessions at Einstein 2 weeks ago, we were asking the doctors for some details about this. Exactly when do they suction out the mucus from the patient? When did they take him off of the respirator? So the doctors didn't, we had two people asked the same question. We wanted to know exactly the details so that both doctors didn't really understand what we were driving at. They thought that we were choshed them that they're not taking good care of the patient. So they both answered, you don't have to worry about it, they said. They take it out well in advance, before the person is holding by choking to death. They take it out regularly every 3-4 hours. They didn't know exactly how long. They take it out every several hours, even though the person doesn't need it yet. They take them off with the respirator in order to clear out the mucus, that there shouldn't be any sarcoma later on. And then when the question was posed again, so the second doctor gave the same answer. So this really presents a problem. If we should adopt the position, as many do adopt, if we should adopt the position that we don't consider these brain-dead people as really dead, we consider them alive, or at least suffix chai, suffix meis, so then we would assume that it's prohibited to take them off of the respirator. So to take them off and then to put them back on, that's fine, we haven't killed them, but to take them off in order to suction out the mucus and then say, like Rav Moshe said, well, once he's off, you're not going to have to put him back on. So that's a question. What right do we have to take him off in the first place? That's a serious question. So it's a shayla, can you leave that fact the way it is? Once they took off the respirator for the purpose of suctioning out the mucus, you're not obligated to put it back on. We should insist you have to leave the respirator if you hold that it's a suffix chai, suffix meis, or a vadei chai. We should insist you have to leave the person on the respirator until the time that he actually chokes to death. And then you're not mechuyav to suction out the mucus, so you let him die. I would assume so. There's no pain anyway. No one feels any pain anyway. According to Rabbi Tendler, he's dead already. There's no shayla. Even if you hold him up like Rabbi Tendler, he doesn't feel any pain because the nervous system is not working. Some have suggested that even if we assume that these people are considered vadai chai or sofik chai, and it's prohibited either b'toras vadai b'toras sofik to kill them, but to take organs out of their body for the sake of pikuach nefesh on another person, perhaps this should be mutter because of pikuach nefesh. And although the din is that pikuach nefesh is not mati risa ritzicha, but the Gemara says that the reason why pikuach nefesh is not mati risa ritzicha is because my father is domadoch su miktvei, duma domadu ugabris su miktvei. But if this fellow is a treif and the other fellow is a shalem, so maybe then we should argue the point and say that you can say, chazis, we know that his dam is still miktvei. This one is a shalem and this one is a treif. So this is a machlokes in achrayim. If you look in the Nishmas Avram, the Sefer Nishmas Avram, the Yerodei quotes all of the sources, the Prima Gadim said, and the Beis Yitzchok, Rabbi Yitzchok Shmelkish disagreed with him. And I think it's generally assumed that it's not permissible for the simple reason that the Gemara never said that. The Gemara says, if you'll remember the Gemara Baal Peh, I'm sure you remember, the Gemara says, how do you know that Yehorig Val Yavar by Gilui Arai? So the Gemara says, well, how do I know Yehorig Val Yavar by Shvichas Domim? That's a Svara, my Chazis. Then the Gemara says, but now I have a Hekish, Ki Kashi Yokumish Arayer, Tzach HaNavish, Kein HaDavar HaZeh. So I have a Hekish that compares Gilui Arai to Shvichas Domim. So just like I apply Yehorig Val Yavar to Shvichas, so too it applies to Gilui Arai. So the Kesef Mishneh points out on a difficult Rambam, it's not the Rambam's fault, the Rambam quoted the Mishneh, that if Nachum come to a group of Yisrael and they say, Tnu lonu achas mikem, Simlav narages kulchem, so they're not permitted to give anybody over, and Yehorgu kulam, Mutav she Yehorgu kulam, Ayim su nefesh achas mi Yisrael. So the Ramach and his Hasogas on the Rambam asks, it doesn't make any sense. He's not really asking a kasha on the Rambam, it's a kasha on the Mishneh. It's not the Rambam's fault. The Mishneh Trumas says the Feirish like that. And the Pashta says that even though Ben Kovako, everyone is going to die, we still say, Ayimot and Nefesh Achas Mi'isol. So the Ramach asks, but the Svara doesn't apply. So the case Mishneh says that the Gemara only said in the first step that it's a Svara. But if you say that there's a Hekish to Gilui Arayis, then I learned back from Gilui Arayis to Shvichas Domin that by Shvichas Domin Guf it's a din that Yehorig Val Yavar. It's not only the Svaris. Even in instances where the Svara doesn't apply, the din of Yehorig Val Yavar will still apply. And that's how Rabbi Chaim Moisit quotes in Achiyaz in the name of Lechem de Shloimai. That's what Rav Soloveitchik said also. The name of Rabbi Chaim and not Rambam. that it's not only because it's Maichazis, it's Halacha, that you heard Bal Yavar is Halacha, that there's an Isser of Ritzicha, even in a situation of Pikuach Nefesh. I wanted to close with one final point. Rav Tendler had a Taina. He didn't present, I assume time didn't allow earlier, he didn't present the Taina, which others have disputed, which I think is not such a poshita thing. I think Rabbi Tendler is perhaps more correct than the others. Rabbi Tendler said a Taina that if you consider these people as alive, a suffix alive, the person whose brain that is alive, a suffix alive, so how can you allow your Talmidim, how can you allow your Balabatim to go to Pittsburgh to take a heart transplant? How are you allowed to take the heart of the dead person? If you hold that the person is alive and it's an act of Ritzich, how are you permitted to use that heart for yourself? What was the taina? Not that the taina that the heart is it's also banor. That's not the shaila. Also ban meisim mutzu banor for tikkurat nefesh. Yorg ba yaver. How can you take it? So many rabbanim said no. That just because they send their balabatim and their talmidim to Pittsburgh and they allow balabatim to get heart transplants from these people whom we know the transplants have to be made while the patient is brain dead, and they hold that the patient is either vadachai or safekchai, but since in the hospitals they have a list, they have a whole list of people who need a heart, and if you don't want the heart, they're going to call up the next guy and he's going to take the heart, so then cover card, they're going to cut out the other fellow's heart, so since they're going to cut it out anyway, so there's no problem on your part. There's no Issa and you're receiving the heart. If Ben Kovakot, they're going to cut out the heart. They're going to do the act of Ritzicha, so he's permitted to take. So Rav Tendler had a time that he doesn't think, on a previous occasion, didn't say it today, he doesn't think that this is correct. If you're not allowed to take out the heart, so it should be prohibited to take the heart. What exactly was that time? What exactly is that argument? So I remember when we learned this Rambam, the Rambam quotes this Mishnah in Trumas. Tanur lo no achas became involved in Aragas Kulchan. So the Rambam quotes the Mishnah that so the Ramach has the kashe, but the svar of Maichazis doesn't apply. So the Kesef Mishneh, Rav Chaim, and the Chem de Shlomo all answer that originally the din begins as a svar of Maichazis, but after you say that it's a hekesh to Gili Arayis, then it's established as a din, not only as a svar. So then you carry it back from Gili Arayis to Shvichas Damim, and there it's also a din. So what is taka the getter of the din? What is the optaich? What's the nature of this din? So the Rav pointed out, in the name of Rav Chaim, Rav Chaim has the first piece in the Chibra on the Rambam. It's not exactly written like this, but this is the way the Rav said it over, that the Gemara has a machlokes in Ezer Neshef between Ben Petura and Rabbi Akiva essays in Europe, that Ben Petura must have been a Christian thinker, because it doesn't make any sense. I should lose my life in order to save his life. And Rabbi Akiva presented the true Jewish tradition. That's how the atheist writes. He presented the true Jewish tradition. What kind of baloney is this? So Rav Soloveitchik pointed out, and Rav Chaim has in the Sefer that Mi'ikar Adin, and Haschinah has also, Mi'ikar Adin Ben Petura is right. He wasn't a Christian thinker, he was a Tana. Mi'ikar Adin Ben Petura is right. Why is Ben Petura right? But I'm not killing the other fellow. I'm not doing lo sirtzah. I'm just drinking the water. Ben Petura holds that the getter hadin is I'm not permitted to save my life at the expense of another person's life. But Rabbi Akiva has a pasuk chayecha koyim lechayecha vercha, that if it's biyad echemhem kitu shamayim, if I have the cup of water, my life wasn't in danger in the first place. Your life is in danger. You don't have any water. I have the water. And even though gzeil is mutter mishum tikraf nefesh, so the other fellow is allowed to steal the water, but tells man that he didn't steal the water, I have the kitu shamayim, so my life is not b'sakana. Let's say I live in the city, there's water all over, so my life is not b'sakana. So if I'm in the midbar and I have the kitu shamayim, my life is not b'sakana. So then Rabbi Kiva says that it's permissible for me to drink the water. But what would be the din if you have shnayim shem hachem midbar, and there's a kitu shamayim shal hefker? Then the Rav said, based on Rav Chaim, I don't remember, he said a name of Rav Chaim, based on Rav Chaim, that then Rabbi Akiva would agree with Ben Petura that it's prohibited for either of them to drink the water fully, to drink all the water, because I'm not permitted to save my life at the expense of another person's life, even though I'm not violating Lo Sirtza. That's all included in the pasuk of Yehari Gval Yavar. So I think Rabbi Tendler's taina is a shtarke taina, that if you really hold that these brain dead people are either vadai chai, that the kohen can wipe off the brow, or at least a suffik chai, I don't see how he can hold that the vadai chai. I can understand why it should be suffik chai, because of the two sveikas that I mentioned earlier. If you consider that it's at least suffik chai, or possibly even vadai chai, I think there should be a serious shaila regarding using the organs from these people, because lemaise, they don't just cut out the aver and then call me up, am I interested in taking the organ. I have to be there They have to call me and I ask them, take out the aver, and I want to be the one to receive that aver. So l'chora, I would assume that that should be in violation of this din. This should be a case where everybody should agree, where Rabbi Akiva should agree to Ben Patur, that it's prohibited to save my life at the expense of another person. Thank you very much.
What?
Two comments first, and the question. I'd like to make one comment first. I don't think there is any Torah institution in the world where such a discussion could be held except here in Yeshiva Yitzchak Elkanah. I would just like to add a little bit to Rav Schachter's brilliant presentation and clarify a few points. First, it's really a little difference in attitude to myself and most other people who work on this interface of Torah and Halacha and science. As I've said many times in Shir, our Chachomim, our sages, were very observant Jews. They observed very well. And whatever the eye could see, they never made mistakes. Besides being Rishonim Kemalochim, they were also smart old Jews. Rashi in Yuma is exactly, there is no other pshat, is exactly the case of Harvard criterion followed by apnea. That's what Rashi says. First establish that all neurological signs of life no longer exist. Then all that's left is the next determination. Will they be restored or not? The test of the non-restorative ability is if there is no longer any breathing. The breathing guarantees that the previous condition, which you interpreted as death, is indeed permanent. That's all that Vayipach Baba Nishmas Chor HaChaim says. Once the breathing stopped, there is no restorative, no recuperative potential for the individual. So that it is not applying modern terminology to the Gemara. It's showing that the Gemara was fully aware of the observation that Nisales happens, people stop breathing and then they start again, that people's heart stops and then they start again, and then there are certain conditions which we assume to be permanent changes that occurs when Vayipach Baba Nishma Shulchaim is also violated. Second point to make, so it's clear, and that's reference to what Rav Schachter said about Kol HaYivorim Shanasham and Tluya Behem. I think it'd be better if I could give you this gory imagery that Rav Schachter should please relate to, and that is real decapitation. If you ask any resident, he'd rather have that patient decapitated. He doesn't want to go through the mouth, through the nose. It'd be much easier if they took the head off, then he puts the tube right in, straight down. The heart will keep on beating, the lungs will keep up, the liver will keep on functioning, the kidney will keep on functioning, all the other Eivorim, Shanashim, Tumim will be functioning. Will you still say that patient is alive? I buried the head already next to Esav, and I now have this body lying there with every other organ functioning. It's this imagery you must relate to. When we say physiological decapitation, it means decapitation. So that the concept of all the other Eivorim could possibly be a factor in deciding whether yes or no, or this patient is dead or not, is I think quite irrelevant under the light of our present understanding of what it means when a patient is brain dead. The point concerning the Shreel Shuvah and Tfilin, that indeed there is no other pshat in the Raivid, but the Raivid was defining Eiver, not Chiyus. It is, that's why the Pasuk, the question was, what's the difference? I mean, if a bird is a bird that flies, and I have chickens that don't fly, I have birds that don't fly, it's obviously not that. To want to show that a limb, which is a useless limb even, could still be considered to be an intrinsic part of that animal form, enough to be a mechusar eiver, therefore he had to bring a raya, that for a if you had a wing, it would make no difference because you're not dependent upon the wing. It would be a nice addition. There'd be less chance of planting a bomb in your tail. So therefore your flight there is so much safer. But the limb would be basically a useless appendage. We don't need it. We could be a human without that limb. A bird can't be a bird without having a wing. That's what the Pasuk teaches us. Therefore it becomes an Eva where Mechusar Eva could possibly apply to it. Next point, I think the critical point that there seems to be a fundamental error. All the rayas from animals don't apply to humans when it comes to defining death. Because that's what Rambam says in Hilchos Rotzeach. After listing trefos as trefos of animals, yutches trefos, when it comes to trefos of Adam, what does the Rambam say? Koma sheyomu l'charofim. He recognized the variable nature of medical understanding and said the definition of trefa of Eino Chaya is only what the doctors tell you. No other characteristic of a dying process applies to man because it applies to animal. So it's extremely difficult to go ahead and transfer information that you pick up from examples of animal in order to apply them to man for defining chiyus, when in the basic definition of chiyus, there gotta be even trefa Eino Chaya, we say those principles do not apply. The next point, just a little technical point. When a person drowns, the heart does not keep on circulating the blood. It's the example I gave before. The person drowns in cold water, then the need for oxygen of the various cells is greatly reduced. That's what we do when we do heart surgery. We freeze the patient practically. We put him under hypothermia, under low temperature. Then the need of the cell for oxygen is greatly reduced. So the cell can survive on the existing oxygen that's already in the blood. But the heart doesn't keep on beating. The heart stops, like the lungs stop. But even though it stopped, the saturated oxygen that was there keeps the cells alive if you can take it. There was an example just now, two years ago, of a little boy, 40 minutes in cold water underwater, and he recovered without neurological deficit. The next point, a little critical point here, Rav Shapiro, the Zechon Levracha, wonderful Rashi we had for a while, the nephew of the Rav Rashi, who reported on the Diyunim, we're just learning in Ashir Sanhedrin also, the chilik between Chishuv and Ibur, as you well know. The Chishuv, what they talked about, Svaras they gave, each one was showing off to see what kind of lumdus they can introduce. The Ibur, the decision whether to accept brain death or not, was made solely on the basis of Mashveel's Shuva. As you know, they only wanted to confirm that the Shveel believed that halacha l'maaseh. When I wrote them that indeed the Shveel paskin that way for a woman in my own town, they went to halacha l'maaseh, that many, many cases he asked people to take off a respirator when there was evidence of brain death. That was the final decision. It was not based upon the idea of two people committing murder. Conspiracy murder is less heter than single murder. Those were only discussions that went on. But the final decision was made solely on the basis of the Shveel's Tshuva. And that distinction now about water and oxygen, the do not feed, we have our do not resuscitate, DNR, DNT, do not treat, do not feed, do not provide water. Shveel felt a little stronger. He never had that out expressed. I'm not saying this in his name. I'm very careful when I quote my Shveel. That's how he never came made a deal in a final decision, but the consideration is very important. He felt that when a man is put in your care and he's totally dependent upon you for water, not to provide the water may also be considered to be active euthanasia. So not only, although he spoke only about discontinuing, he had a big suffix in his mind. Unlike not providing him with penicillin if he catches pneumonia, not providing him with blood pressure drugs if his blood pressure drops, not to give water was to him such a critical aspect of one man's responsibility to another that he concerned himself that even though this looks like an act of omission, it may be in halacha an act of commission. No different, he said, than lighting a candle in a house that is sealed in a mausoleum, where the act of lighting the candle, which will inevitably lead to the death of the patient, a dead individual, because it uses up the oxygen, that is looked upon as an active, even though it occurs over a long period of time. And then the last point I'd like to just make a quick comment on, and that is on the suctioning. The suctioning and the Shveel's statement that you can stop and check if the patient is indeed breathing independently is only because all the evidence showed that the patient is dead. And you have a responsibility to that patient. You got to bury him. You got to tell Kohanan to stay out of the hospital. The Gemara says you have to be mevarer. That's the levuli. You got to prove. You can't go on indefinitely. Is the patient dead or not? If you can show that you can be mevarer without imposing any physiological stress on the patient, the Sheriff felt that's a normal, expected activity of medicine and of another human being to determine whether the patient is dead or not. So once you had to disconnect, if he said you could watch him so carefully and he makes any faint attempt to breathe, you immediately put back the respirator, he didn't think you're doing anything that would harm that patient. Therefore, you're merely in that normal process of determining whether that patient is alive or dead.
Okay, at this point we will take questions. As I asked before, not to make a presentation, but to list the questions. We will take them, and I assume that Rav Shechta and Rav Tamla will want to respond to them. Instead of responding to each one, we'll ask that you list all of the questions. Rav Shechta and Rav Tamla will note them if you wish to respond, and then our doctors, alumni, and friends who are here might want to make some comment at the end. We will welcome them. Rabbi Rosenbaum will take the questions.
Rabbi Kanarik, and would you, gentlemen, if you could, I don't know if you can make your way up here for the tape, but at least speak very loudly. Thank you.
The only thing was not explained because those are chapter and ten are pretty much definitely dead. What still functions in the body if the brainstem?
The question is, what is possibly happening after there is no brain activity? What would call it alive? Any other questions, right? Immediately. Rabbi Witte.
I would like Rabbi Tendler just to comment on the second sheet of the Gemara where it talks about Hechan Boso. The Gemara talks about Kapuro or Lipo. What exactly would be, if not the Maitha La Aloche, what would justify that Mandoma?
Any other questions immediately? No, then perhaps. Yes, Rabbi Flaum.
Rabbi Tendler, I just want to ask a question. True that you mentioned before that Meshver had written to you about interpretation of death. The first continuous sense of the criteria of Stamsofer. The bottom thing with that Shuvah, Shem Shaman says, is that Stamsofer continuously adheres to the criteria of the Chacham Tzvi, who learned Rashi in Sefer Zion and Pekei. To learn that Rashi would go to the opinion that the Lev is the source of Chiyus, but since they could not be blamed into Lev because of the Christ situation over there, they used respiration to determine whether the Lev is still working. Now, if the Chassam Shofar can build on the Chacham Tzvi, look upon the Lev as being the source of Chiyus, and your Shver used that to say, look at that Shul of what's interpretation of death traditionally, how do you therefore come to say that we therefore reject circulation and therefore look totally on brain death?
All right. Is there Dr. Berger? Perhaps Rabbi Berger here. I'm not sure which one.
Rabbi Schachter, in your presentation, as I understood it, there was pretty much an equation of various divarim upon which life depends. They sort of all equal to one another. Now, with respect to brain death, you entertain the possibility that it may in fact constitute death, at least in the subject. With respect, let's say, to liver death, presumably it wouldn't occur to anybody, and I imagine that the position would be that if the person's liver will clearly not function, stop functioning, but he has a few hours or whatever it is to live, and he writes again, and he's functioning, lucid, that there would be no suffix here. But which means that there, unless you there would be. Maybe he's really a suffix, maybe he's a child, not yet. If you go that far, you go that far. If not, there seems to be an implicit distinction between the brain and other parts, other such a part, which could affect our discussion as well.
Okay, I think we'll take some answers now. Just one comment before we go to the answers, while you're still here. Tapes will be available of this shiur, and I'm sure there'll be a desire for it. All, in addition to which, Rabbi Tendler has volunteered to give us, to make, enable us to provide to you the makoros that he has referred to, Xerox of all of the slides. Though for those who are interested, they'll come together in a package with the tapes. Please contact me at the Rabbinic Alumni Office, either immediately afterwards or at your convenience. There are also still tapes available of the medical conference also. One more coming for Rabbi Shechter takes over. I'd like to also take note of the fact that this is an unusual group in that we have Rabbonim, Rosh Yeshiva. I'd like to thank some of the various Rosh Yeshiva who are not presenting. In addition to Rabbi Tendler, Rabbi Shechter, we have present with us Rabbi Schussheim, Rabbi Blau, Rabbi Neuberger, Rabbi David Hurwitz, Rabbi Jonathan Sachs, and from other faculty members from all areas of the university, from the high schools, from the college, from the Jewish Studies Department. And it really is very rewarding to see that our efforts are appreciated and draw the interest of both students and faculty. Thank you, Rabbi Shechter.
On the last point, if the liver is dead, I would assume that 2 and 2 is equal to 4. In my opinion, it's exactly the same shaila as brain death. I don't see any difference. You have a varm shanashama tliyaban, and if the blood circulation has ceased in a fashion that it's irreversible, then that aver is dead. And if you should assume that if one aver shanashama tliyaban is dead, the person is dead, so he's dead, even though he's walking around and even though he's talking. And the question is exactly what happens after a person is brain dead. It's very different from Hutas Rosho. Hutas Rosho, I understand that the blood circulation will stop in a matter of seconds. Masheni can, and I think all of the statements in the Gemara.
No change whatsoever.
I misunderstood. You see, we had the session we had 2 weeks ago.
Misunderstood.
Someone, wait, wait, wait.
Exact same thing that you're doing with the head on, going with the head off. If you keep on the respirator, the body will keep on functioning. No difference whatsoever.
That was one of the questions that was posed to the doctor 2 weeks ago. Is it possible?
And the answer is exactly what I'm answering you.
No, is it possible to put a person on a respirator if the head was cut off?
He said, of course. Only he wouldn't do such a thing, he said, because it's not like the nurse would get scared.
Right. The question is, Gemara, is it possible? Bismara Gemara is certainly not possible. No, so Hutas Rosh of Bismara Gemara, in a matter of seconds, the person will die.
From blood loss.
Right, because the blood is not circulating.
Oh, that's the mother, the same thing. Those seconds is the life.
I don't see that that's a halacha. The halacha, in my opinion, is...
No, not halacha. Halacha comes later, first in the seals. The seals is the patient will live just as long without the head. In fact, all the evidence now shows, patient will live longer if you take off the head, because we believe now there's a neurotoxin from the decaying brain that stops the heart functioning. If you take the head off, the chances are you'll have a much more prolonged survival of the other organs.
I don't know. Okay. I don't know. My understanding of what the doctor described 2 weeks ago is totally not like
that.
Okay. Okay. As far as all of the passages in the Gemara, where the Gemara has all the different opinions in Chulin as to how you determine whether the person is dead, my understanding was, not like Rabbi Tendler published an essay many years ago, that it's a Yesedes Dika Machloikis, is it this, is it that. I didn't see any Yesedes Dika Machloikis. I thought that everything in the Gemara with the Rashi and Yuma, everything is just a question of determining whether all the Evorim, Shanashama Kli Bohem, are dead or not. I don't see that there's so much Yisaitis going on. As far as what Rav Tendler pointed out before, that the Rambam in Hilchos Ritzeach distinguishes between Trefas Adam and Trefas Behemah, Taisus points out that the Trefas are different. I don't think the Rambam is saying a different thing there. The Rambam is saying that the Dinim of Trefa, the Gabi Lo Sirtza, who is considered the Arab Tila, is not identical with the Dinim of Trefa, the Gabi Macholas Asuris. It's a different word. But as far as what's the definition of death, not what's the definition of Trefa, that all of the Mefarshim and the Mishnah say that Adam Behemba has to be the same. You have to work with Klolim. And the Klolim. Adam Hu Anefesh, blood circulation, and then you have to decide whether you want all of the Evam Shana Shama Kli Behem to be dead, or if any one of them is dead, then the whole goof of the Baal Chai is dead. But the Mefarshim and the Mishnah say, Hutas Roshim, that Behem and Odom and Oif and Chai and Sheretz, it's all the same thing. There's no distinction.
Rabbi Tendler?
Halacha. That doesn't seem to make sense is not halacha. V'omru rakam chochom v'novon agoya gadol azeh. You cannot say that there are 20 patients in every hospital in total liver failure, that these patients are dead, that they're metame biohel, that they cannot write a get lishto. Liver failure will lead imminently to death. The problem is, Rav Shechter equated all the neshamas, all the Eivorim together. From here you see, it just cannot be. You can't have a man who is dead. A fellow who's Nikav Hadeshet, who's going to sheet Nikav Hadeshet is a Nadele, it's a Nadele Michayim, dead he's not. But doesn't follow. Therefore you see a big chilik. Brain dead indeed. He cannot say to get Ishti, so he's dead. A fellow without a liver, I mean, many people most likely couldn't survive with their wives for all those years if they had a liver that produced a gal. You have to be a mensch on a gal to survive. Consequently, I think, although the Rai is a very nice one, that in when it comes to the inyonim that have to do with what is considered to be a whole organism, and I've been mamayit this organism by excluding an important Ava, that's a chsoron in the kulo concept. That's only a mixas, and it can't be a mixas and spashit bekulu. So that, in that concept, in the shomash, Eva shon shomash tuyibo, that is considered a chesron Ava, it's a chsoron in the whole group. But to say to equate, therefore, because brain in the Shema Truyibo means death, therefore liver means death, that I believe has little basis in halacha. The question posed by Rav Widi, what does Ad Chotmo Ad Libo mean? Ad Libo could be interpreted just exactly that way. The machlokas over there was, since you're dealing with Greek medicine, Arab medicine, where they believed, like the Chacham Tzvi records old medicine, or like the Hapardis of a few months ago recorded the newest findings in medicine, quoting from Galen. That will be most likely repeated now for the next 20 years as the latest findings in 1988. They discovered Galen's opinion that the lungs don't do anything, they just merely warm the blood, and that therefore it's not an Eivor Shana Shoma Tuya Boy. Therefore they don't mention anything about lungs, because that was the knowledge of the time, that lungs didn't do too much, and therefore the heart does it all. Therefore they felt that the heart indeed is the principal Eivor. What's interesting is your question, how about the third mandama, Atiburo, the belly button. Now what the heck does a belly button have to do with Neshama Tuya Boy there? I mean, it may be an important thing in the neshama for those people from Oriental cultures who sit and contemplate their belly buttons. Maybe that may be a sign of brain death. but I'll give you an explanation. It's a very brilliant, brilliant suggestion in the Gemara, and I believe the Gemara that mandama is the better mandama, that you should pasken atiburo. Because he's referring to the agonal breathing, the last breathing after the lungs don't work already, after the diaphragm doesn't work already, then you see the intercostal breathing, those intercostal muscles I showed, where the patient is struggling, the agonal breathing, the very last breathing, it can be seen in the belly button area, not in the nose. The nose isn't functioning, it won't blow any breaths out anymore, but you can still see movement over there. I believe that's how you have to ramp shot in that tibur. He's referring to that intercostal breathing, the last structure, last struggle of the muscles that control the size of the pleural cavity to get some kind of vacuum to suck in some air. And therefore, if I were learning shot in that Gemara, if I had a right to paskin, I'd paskin that chotmo is not enough. You have to check in the atiburo to make sure that last little gasping breath, because that's the way breathing goes. Breathing goes with the diaphragm, goes with the side muscles, and a man isn't dead until he's dead. And if dead means the absence of breathing, it includes atiburo as well.
Dr. Rosenstock.
First of all, I'd like to thank both of the discussants. I really feel that their presentation today is a lot. But I have a question in terms of practice. In the practice of medicine today, in dealing with patients who are dying, we are faced with very critical decisions as to kriyas mana mavas. The discussants have talked about it in theory, but in practice, this is very, very difficult to apply. First of all, we do have an apnea test now that's usually indicative on most respirators, where there is an apnea indicator or an assisting indicator, whereby if a patient does
evince even a millimeter of mercury of inspiratory effort, that light will go on. And if we just prolong the respiratory cycle, we can have an apnea indicator without doing the loading. And if we know that the blood gases are at that point in time adequate for sustaining life, a normal PCO2, a normal PO2, we can then have adequate apnea testing. However, who among us in the physician community is willing to risk the Suffolk Ritzicha of turning off a respirator or of allowing a GOSES to have a surgical procedure to harvest an organ as a donor? Who among us in the physician community is willing to say that, okay, this is the Zman HaMoves, and I'm willing at this point in time either to cut as a surgeon if I were a transplant surgeon, or as an internist, which I am, to say pull the plug, or to move the patient if he's a GOSES? In practical terms, how do we apply the definitions that are being proposed today, either from yourself or from Rav Schechter?
Problem for which he deserves a Purple Heart. If he had safely moved to some good Italian community and lived like a mensch. We'll leave the societal problem away. Let's talk Meheri Yibana Beis HaMikdash. Okay? And Tumah V'Tahara is an important thing. Okay? Now, what are you going to do now? Answer me quickly. The Kohen Gadol just came to visit his mother, and she meets the brain death criteria of a Moshe Zatzal. You can't live your life with fakis because of another problem. You see, Baruch Hashem, the Frum community also has voting power. You tell me now, as I will tell you, as you might not be aware, that I can keep a brain dead patient alive if I want to play games for 2 months. Okay? It was just done for a pregnant woman, as you know. It's a massive experiment in physiology to be able to do such a thing. But it can be done. It costs $286,000 to do it. They tried to prove a point, had a grant for it. They were able to keep the pregnant woman alive after she was truly brain dead. Alive after brain dead. Notice the difficulty of terminology, right? And enough so that a baby would mature and give birth to a viable child. I can do it for everybody. Now, what's going to happen? Let's say right now that Blue Cross who come and investigate your notes on your patients where the tests were done and the apnea indicator showed that he was not breathing, and you don't have to do the tests anymore on the new respirators. I didn't mention that, I was aware of that. So that you have to record it, or nurse will record the apnea light, or you were asked to do the test, and then what? Who's going to pay? What is it, $1,200 a day you charge at Maimonides for a day in the intensive care? Right?
That's without meals.
Without meals. five days, 6 days, 7 days. Sure, it's a practical problem. And I'd be darned if I would like to be the one that would have to sign or say pull the plug. I can tell you what's done in a secular hospital, not in the third institution called Maimonides Hospital. Right? The chief of neurology is called in. He tells his assistant to pull the plug. He tells the resident to pull the plug, who tells the nurse to pull the plug. And if the janitor's around, he usually does it.
Rabbi Sam?
I'm sorry.
My Shmuel Zatzal, as you know, refers to Achrenim very rarely. He, not that he discredited Achrenim, it's because he grew up where his library wasn't as good as the library of any bar mitzvah boy today. He didn't have all the Sarab available and made use of his great Achrenim, or the Shach and the Taz, the Neisi Kelim of the Shulchan Aruch. He used them to learn Pshat in the Gemara and so on, as you're aware, if he uses Dibros Moshe as well as Igros Moshe. Chaim Sofer was one of the achoinim that he made use of. Whatever the tshuva says that is not time bound, he came with his tshuva to show that the facts of the Sam Sofer are not relevant here, because the Sam Sofer is not talking about a man who's on a respirator. It had no such thing as brain death. The principles of Sam Sofer lays down are the ones that he referred to. The fundamental principles, if there's any sign of life, that you must maintain that patient to the best of your ability, of course so. Now, the new detail, like I now have a decapitated patient on a respirator, etc., that obviously he didn't even bother referring to it. He didn't think anybody would go ahead and transfer the information of a Sam Sofer built upon a Chacham Tzvi, who believed that the heart was the source of respiration, not the lungs, and use that as a medical basis for making a halacha. The halacha doesn't change, but our understanding of science changes, and when the doctors tell us, then we don't change the halacha. We apply the halacha we've always been applying. They mentioned many times, we have bad press. When a doctor treats a patient and then says, I have a new drug, the old drug was no good, you give the doctor a yashikoyach, he shows he's up to date in medicine. If a rov will tell you, I now looked up to the Gemara again, and I saw a different Gemara, and I realized I was paskening wrong all these years, he's called an amoritz, and you fire him. There's no such thing as the progress of halacha. There is such a thing as the progress of medicine.
Rabbi Herr?
Louder. I'm just thinking of the subject. You're really on a borderline. Mr. Shulchanar himself deals with it. That I'm not talking about taking salt off the tongue and the patent and yes and no, and there's a whole discussion as far as the patent explanation is, but at that point it hasn't been really touched upon. Mr. Shulchanar himself deals with that, and there are days of Shulchanar on it.
Clarify the question. The Gemara. No, not mentioned. Not mentioned. Shouldn't take it off. Yeah. You're referring to something. All the Talmidim are aware that Shulchan Aruch, that in the old days they maintained a patient who was dying. They maintained him, they felt, by putting a pellet of salt under his tongue. And that was very simple. The patient was lying there without motion. By putting a salt under his tongue, he made motions. He made motions with his lips and his tongues and swallowed, so that they felt somehow they're keeping him alive that way. All they were doing was checking a residual response of the nervous system. And therefore the question is, they saw him in agonal state, and he's obviously struggling to die, as Rav Shechter referred to the Ran and the Dorim, he needs your help to let him die. So the Ramah says it's permissible to remove the salt from under his tongue. And the question that should be posed is, how can you touch that patient? He is a rosis, how dare you touch it? So from this you see a good raya, that it's no isur to touch a patient. Isur is to touch a patient for no purpose that's useful to him. They felt that to remove this gagia shel melech is a useful thing to do for the patient, like it's therefore they permitted the doing it. Also it's the stopping of the beating of the hammer from the outside, obviously it doesn't touch the patient. Here you see, even to touch the patient, if it was clearly for his benefit, the Chazal didn't have any objection to it. That's the only point you can bring from there. But the fact that they recognized that this is indeed a patient who will surely die, and that we're doing something to preserve his life, and we need not continue it because the penalty is being paid is too great, namely the continued painful existence of the patient, that's a good raya. That's what Rav Shechter really referred to when he said, when you see a patient is struggling to die, that you no longer try to prolong his death, his dying process, because death is absolutely imminent. But that doesn't permit you to shorten the life, which is the issue that Rav Shechter raised. Can I remove the respirator?
That fellow is not lengthening his life.
Whatever it is at that level.
I have no further questions. Perhaps that little discussion before between Rabbi Shechter and Rabbi Tendler could be clarified. I believe that I'm very pleased to say that I'm gratified that Dr. Richard Lipton, who was one of the presenters at our Einstein session, has arrived somewhat tardy, but I'm sure he was kept by good reason. Perhaps you could clarify, could we discuss that again? That discussion that we had, what was the answer? Rabbi Shechter, what was your question? The decapitation. You restated.
Yes. Okay, I'll repeat the question. Dr. Lipton, you made history. You now have a whole Talmudic academy arguing on what Dr. Lipton held. This is no greater honor has been done to any man. We argue about what the sages said, and we also argue about what Dr. Lipton said. The only one difference is that we don't really are not compelled to obey what Rabbi Lipton said. The question was posed, if you can we equate the brain dead patient with the truly decapitated, with the anatomically decapitated patient, with a patient whose head has been severed, can we, under present conditions, as we mentioned last time when we met, where surgically we would remove the head of the patient, of course maintaining good surgical procedures so that the patient doesn't suffer loss of blood, or you provide it from the blood bank, which is working across the street, and could you then maintain the patient where the heart would keep on beating and the lungs would keep on breathing as long as we maintain the respirator?
I don't know how I was relieved when you added that you don't feel compelled to obey what I say, since I, you know, as I said at the first session, although I feel like I know a great deal about brain death from a medical perspective, I feel entirely naive about what would constitute an appropriate halakhic definition of death and claim no expertise whatsoever in that domain. I think the analogy of considering brain death a form of physiologic decapitation is an appropriate one. It is, you know, it is the case that under exceptional circumstances, brain dead patients with heroic measures in some cases can be maintained for prolonged periods of time. It isn't the case that that can be done at will with everyone, and on average, even when ventilator support is maintained in the setting of brain death, patients continue to have a beating heart for, you know, usually 3 to 5 days, and it isn't always possible to prolong life. And I think that's important when we consider the analogy of physiologic decapitation as well, because I could not say that we could maintain a surgically decapitated body for an indefinite period of time, but I think it's, and no one in the world would ever do this experiment, but my speculation is that it would be possible to maintain a decapitated body for a number of days in an intensive care unit, just as we maintain a person in quotes who meets criteria for brain death for an extended period of time.
Can you explain 2,000 years ago, how long would it take for all of the organs to cease function?
Yeah, I think the point of the question really easily. You know, I think the point of the question really is that, in a sense, the dissociation between brain death on the one hand and cardiorespiratory death on the other is a kind of technological artifact, and by that I mean, in the absence of medical intervention, and 2,000 years ago the sorts of medical interventions that we now do routinely were not available, in the absence of medical intervention, once the heart stops or once breathing stops, the brain surely would die in 5 to 10 minutes. And what happens...
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say it backwards?
Well, I mean, it goes in both directions. The point really is that the function of the heart and lungs and the function of the brain are tightly coupled, and if the heart stops and the lungs stop... How long? In the absence of medical intervention, it would happen very quickly.
Minutes.
It would require minutes. I guess I misunderstood the thrust of the question. Okay.
How is the one for the dead? Was the head no longer there because he was
in a person who was decapitated 2,000 years ago? You know that. You know, that's a question of, you know, what criteria of death were being applied. And if a halakhic criteria were being applied, then the decapitation itself would be considered the cause of death, and that would be the definition that was being applied. If we were in New York State 10 years ago, we would wait till the heart stopped, and then that person would be considered dead. You know, the difficulty is that it's possible to establish a number of different criteria for death. The criteria that make the most sense to me are, you know, the standard that says a person is dead either when there's an irreversible cessation of function of the entire brain or when the heart and lungs stop. And in fact, in the absence of medical intervention, those two definitions are very tightly linked.
Just add, I see there's a little uncertainty in this thing. You people have all heard of a chicken running around without a head. Right? Looks like a student during reading week. What happens in actual experience? I mean, people who decapitate chickens, which is the way Goyim chef chickens, they use it with an axe. If they hit the head a little bit, neck a little bit high, they leave the brainstem. And hence the chicken, although it cannot express his dismay because he doesn't have the higher brain functioning, keeps on running around without a head simply because he keeps on breathing, the muscles keep on working, the heart is still pumping, and if the blood loss is not significant, only a little head and a big chicken, then the chicken stays alive. You have there a decapitation. Therefore, it really will depend where the decapitation occurs. You can decapitate, you'll have to now need a halachic determination, not only of where the brain death is death, but what is called the head, what is called Rosh in the Gemara. I would need the clear demarcation. Is it the Rosh where the Kesher Shel Tefillin goes, or are there other definitions of Rosh? For that would determine how long a patient would stay alive.
Dr. Q. We're fortunate to have a second opinion on neurology.
No second opinions. I just want to comment that from what Dr. Rosenstock said, and I'm certainly not qualified to comment on the halachic aspects of anything that was discussed. But there really is a front lines. This is not. These discussions are interesting and very nice to listen to. And Rav Schachter especially should understand that these are halacha questions that there are those of us who face it come out on a day-to-day basis. And it's not simple enough to say that we have someone to be sameich on, whether it's Rav Tendler or his interpretation, or actually I shouldn't say his interpretation of what Shver said. But these are real halachic shailos that we have to face. And I'll just give you a sample. I am called on, as I say, regularly to see patients in this condition or who are about to enter into this condition. We are under obligation now by state law to request, in certain instances, for organ transplant from patients' families. And this is a routine thing that we have to deal with. When I was asked about a year ago, I had a case where someone called me and asked me about how to deal with this situation, and they didn't know exactly what they should do, whether they should go ahead and allow certain testing to be done, an EEG or other sophisticated electrical testing. And I'll tell you how I paskin the shiloh, although again I'm not qualified to paskin the shiloh, I'm certainly not. I presented the two sides of the situation as best as I understood it, and from my sense of what this family would really want, I told them either to call Rav Temler in one case or Rav Bleich in another case. Now that certainly is not a way to paskin shiloh. And I'm not qualified to say that one is right or one is wrong necessarily. Another comment, as far as the janitor doing the disconnecting, would that it were so. Nowadays, again, with the state and other attorneys looking over our shoulders, we have to be very careful about who is actually declaring, who is signing, and who is disconnecting. And we do face this trial, even in Maimonides Hospital in Borough Park, Yerei Kodesh, because we have other types of patients. We have Italians, and we have Hispanics. We have non-Orthodox Jews, and we even have an occasional centrist that wanders in. And that's okay to stay here, isn't it?
Okay.
And and we do have these problems. Okay. And again, this is just a strictly personal story. Here I am, a Yeshiva University graduate who has to face the shiloh like that. And I've told the story on occasion, but this is just maybe a couple of months ago.
We had three patients in 1 week who were brain dead, and families had requested that we do all the various testing and allow them to be taken off the respirators. Well, the first two I was able to pawn off on my non-religious associates, perhaps right, perhaps wrong. The third one I happened to have been on call that day, and it was my responsibility. And while I thought I would take all the residents and medical students with me and teach them a lesson about how to examine a patient with brain death, and then...